And I'd like to welcome you to this special session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today, April 6, 2023, we are delighted to be sitting in Rochester for the three arguments that we have on our calendar today. And it looks like we have the attorneys for our first case present, and I'm going to go ahead and call that case, and then I'm going to talk a little bit more before we jump into your arguments. The first case on our calendar is State of Minnesota versus Lamont Chantel Thomas Jr., and the case number is A221438. And as I noted, we've got counsel present with us in the courtroom. Just a few guidelines before we begin hearing your arguments this morning. Counsel for appellant will have 15 minutes to present argument. Counsel for respondent will have 15 minutes, and then counsel for appellant will have a 5-minute rebuttal if you'd like to give one. Your arguments this morning are being recorded, and all arguments are available at the court's website should you like to hear the arguments when you're done. Now, I have to admit, I have no idea how your time is being counted down. I do see this box here, and so I assume that the other side is visible to both attorneys as well. So you can keep your eye on the time. Just be mindful of your time limit. And I think that's it for my remarks. Counsel for appellant, if you're ready, you may proceed and begin your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Levitt, and I represent the appellant, Lamont Chantel Thomas Jr. This court should reverse the district court's order and suppress the evidence of the search of the vehicle stemming from an illegal seizure. The appellant has laid three legal arguments as to why this court should reverse this order. The first argument being that the trooper expanded the duration of the stop after the stop concluded with the warning and citation that was given to Mr. Thomas. This is citing Sayavong, Bell, and Tomeno, which I will get into. The second argument is that the trooper was not credible testifying that he smelled marijuana. And the third argument being that the court erred by relying on testimony of an officer who did not testify. I think the case is a pretty straightforward case, and all comes down to the citation that was given at that moment. I think that is the crux of this case. The stop and initial questioning of Thomas was permissible until the trooper gave Thomas the citation and warning. After that point, Thomas was seized illegally. The trooper did not have independent articulable suspicion to continue Thomas's detention. The continued detention was therefore an illegal seizure that coerced Thomas to answer the question of how much marijuana was in the vehicle. Because the evidence found in the car was a consequence of an illegal seizure, his response to the question was not voluntary, and the district
court... Counsel, would you agree that under current law, if in fact the trooper smelled marijuana, he would be allowed to expand the scope of the stop and perform a search of the car?
I think it's kind of a two-part answer for that in this case. Under our law, absolutely. If he smells marijuana, he is able to search the vehicle. The reason why this is a two-part answer is under the precedent of Sayavong, Bell, and Tomeno, while the trooper doesn't have to announce that he smells marijuana to the defendant, all of those cases lay the precedent of the stop. He's had two times to question him. He's gone back to his vehicle for 6.5 minutes. He's come back. He's issued the citation and warning. At that point, the stop is over, and he's investigating. If he smells marijuana, in the general sense, he is able to search that vehicle. And then it gets into the fact of, is that credible? So I think it's a two-part situation here where under Sayavong, Tomeno, and Bell, the stop is over. When he's given him the citation and warning, there's been no mention of marijuana. There's been no mention of a search. He has not called for backup, a canine, given any indication that he smells marijuana. And his question after giving the citation doesn't indicate that he smells marijuana either. It's an investigative question. It's how much marijuana is in the vehicle today. He also concludes the stop by giving the citation and warning, tells Mr. Thomas he's going to be off down the road, and then he says that will be that portion of the stop and asks a question. Now, people that are stopped police by police have to know that there's some bounds to when this stop ends. He gives him his citation, he tells him he's going to be down the road, and then he says that'll be the portion of the stop. So there's no idea of how long the questioning after that point is going to go. In short, yes, if there is an odor of marijuana, a search is permissible. We would dispute that there was an odor of marijuana and that that was testified to credibly in argument two, but I don't think that determination even needs to be made for the purpose of argument number one. In other words, it's irrelevant to argument one whether he smells marijuana or not, because he has concluded the stop before he's made any inquiry to it.
Well, he was delivering the citation when he reapproached the car. Surely you're not saying he didn't have the right to be there.
Oh, absolutely, he had the right to be there.
Right, and I don't detect, as I read the record, any material passage of time between the handing the paperwork to him and smelling the marijuana. I mean, his question suggests he smelled marijuana. How much marijuana is in the car?
Well, so there's precedent of, I believe it is under, I'd have to double check here, but I think it's one of the cases cited has the question being instantaneous to the, well, let me just start over. I can address that in a moment. I think that the question, to your question, excuse me, spinning my wheels here a second, to your question of it indicates that he smells marijuana, I think that it is a easy next step for him considering that he sees air fresheners. He's made a big deal of the cigarette in the appellant's mouth. And he's shown in his behavior that he wants to investigate for drug activity. I think it's not unimportant that Mr. Thomas is African American. I think it's not important at the time of night. I think if you look at the trooper's conduct, when he goes back to his vehicle, he's looking in the rear of Mr. Thomas's vehicle with a flashlight. He's allowed to do that. The state has argued that that was for officer safety. I disagree. I think he's investigating for anything he can see in plain view. He doesn't see it. He goes back to his car. He gets the citation. He comes back, and he's asking an investigative probing question about marijuana because there's no impact to him. If he decides not to search later, Thomas is on his way, and this never reaches a court. If he finds marijuana, then he's can work backwards as far as he smelled it because it was there.
I think that argument sort of gets us to the second argument you've made, because that's really a credibility question, right?
Correct.
Well, let me just ask you this, though. I mean, did the district court actually make a credibility finding in this case? In reviewing the district court's order, I'm not clear that the district court did. I mean, the district court stated that it is conceivable that Trooper England smelled the marijuana, but I'm not seeing anywhere else in the order that there was a credibility finding made, you know, specific to his credibility. And this is something I certainly plan to ask the state about as well, but I'd be interested in hearing your view on that.
Absolutely. I do not believe there was a credibility determination made, which was an issue raised to the district court and was an important issue. Conceivableness, whether something is possible. It's conceivable that every driver on the highway committed a murder this morning. It's possible. Conceivable isn't the standard. She has to determine whether he was credible or he was not credible, and she didn't do that.
What about the statement from the testimony, it is clear that he smelled marijuana. Is that a credibility finding?
I think it is. It does impact the credibility finding, and I think that this is fact-specific. Now, this court is not going to overturn the facts outside of clear error, but I do think that there is clear error here for a number of reasons. The first being the way that smell functions for us. We do not choose when we smell things. Smell is a sense. You can have an extremely traumatic, difficult situation, and you may associate the smell of that moment with that situation. Same for happy. You could be looking for the nuclear codes. If there's an extremely strong smell, you don't get to distractedly not notice that smell. That's how the human body works. So in this case, the state wants it both ways. They say he's trained, that he's able to see things that the average person cannot see. He's trained in interdiction. He's looking for drugs on the highway. He's standing close to the car. He's leaning in. and he smells nothing. It would make sense that when the window first opens, the smell would be the strongest. He comes back a second time, and the state's argument, which was credited by the district court, is that on the second time, he may not be distracted anymore, and now he smells marijuana. That's not credible. That's not how the sense of smell works. And I think another important statement of how that's not credible is that he smells a strong odor of marijuana at this point. He doesn't say faint. He says strong, which does not logically follow. This stretches the bounds of reason when we actually look at the actual event, you know, off of paper. And I think that's why the district court wrote that it was conceivable, because it doesn't make sense that it would work that way. That's not how smell works. That's not how dissipating smells work. That's not how his job works. I think it was clear that he was investigating the car for narcotics. And I think that as soon as he saw air fresheners, that's where his thought process went. But I think that the correct framework for this is still under Saibong, Tomeno, and Bell, which is where a stop ends. I think it wasn't credible that he smelled the marijuana, but I think also it's more important that we are given bounds for when stops end. And so I think that the trooper was faced with a decision point. He wanted to investigate for drugs, and he didn't call for backup because he didn't smell marijuana. He saw air fresheners, and he saw a cigarette in the appellant's mouth. Now, the state says that no one would have a cigarette in their mouth. They're expensive. They would get soggy. There's numerous places in pop culture, news interviews, where someone may have a cigarette dangling out of their mouth that is not lit. I don't think that that's a factor as to whether narcotics are present. I don't think that the cigarette should play a factor at all. I think there's air fresheners, and that's it. And he knew that. You know, he's experienced, and he's experienced in interdiction. And so he gets back to the car, he gives his warning and citation, and he's has a decision at this point whether he wants to continue this investigation or he wants to let this person go. And I think at that moment he makes the decision to inquire about marijuana. And so I think the credibility determination, while relevant and important, isn't one that needs to be reached, because I think that this should be decided under the precedent of Saibong, Tomeno, and Bell.
Do those cases relate to marijuana? I mean, my understanding is those cases did not relate to the smell of marijuana investigation. And I'm asking because my real question is, does the success of your first argument, is it hinged on the credibility determination in your second argument?
No, it is not. And okay. they don't hinge on marijuana. And I think that's what's important. And that's why this case needs to be decided under these, because the proper framework is not being applied. The district court said that Saibong applied to nervousness. In State v. Smith, that the respondent cites, the opinion is that a single question isn't intrusive, it wasn't overly intrusive. But the Court of Appeals in that case specifically differentiated between Saibong, where it says Saibong related to the duration of the stop. So it separates Smith from Saibong. So it has to do with the duration. They all have to do with drug investigation. I think there's similarities in how the questioning happened, the citation was given, and then additional investigation was had. So I don't think it matters that it's about marijuana or other drugs. I think that what matters is that they're doing additional drug investigation after the citation is given. And there's also more similarities that kind of exist across those three cases. With Bell, there's cologne and cigars that arouse suspicion. So here we have air fresheners and a cigarette, which would be kind of analogous to the cologne, and the cigarette would be kind of analogous to the cigars.
But you conceded at the outset that all he needed was the odor of marijuana, right? He didn't need any of that other stuff, did he?
No, he doesn't. But he goes to great length to point out those factors. Yes, he needs all he needs is the odor of marijuana.
Well, and then, I mean, doesn't that rule or that law make it particularly important for a judge to make a credibility finding when presented with an officer testifying about that one particular fact?
Absolutely. I do think it's absolutely important. It's encompassed in the first argument that he was not credible. I think also it's very important, if you look in the transcript, that when he testifies, I don't know if it was at that moment or 3 seconds later, when I gave the citation that I smelled marijuana. So I think that in order, you know, to examine the smell of marijuana, we also have something that we don't usually have, which is a time of when that happened. He's laying out when he smells this at the time he gave the citation. So I think a credibility determination does not need to be made, but should be made. I think that it's not credible for the reasons I laid out before. But I also think that it's important to apply this precedent that is not being correctly applied, where the district court in this case just wiped away Saibong and said that case relied to nervousness. That's not what Saibong is. And the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court upheld that Saibong applied to the expansion of the duration of the stop. And so I think that that is kind of the key here. It's the expansion of the duration of the stop, and that we have a time statement from the officer of when he smells marijuana, which is at the moment that the stop ends, according to these cases. So I think it's not credible. I think a credibility determination absolutely had to be made at the district court level and wasn't. But for the purposes of this appeal, I've laid out three separate arguments. And the third being that the district court credited officer testimony of an officer who did not testify, the backup officer. Now, how can the district court be relied on to make credibility determinations when we have testimony from someone who did not testify? That's so much larger than just the credibility determination of the first officer. So we don't have credibility determined in the order, just that it's conceivable. And then we also have testimony from an additional officer who did not testify. There was one officer who testified. And so for these reasons, I believe that the district court's order should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We're going to get the timer reset here, and then we'll hear from counsel for respondent.
May I approach the podium?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Christina Gillespie, an assistant Winona County attorney on behalf of the state. Today I ask this court to affirm the district court's ruling. Really, the main issue that we're here for today is because the appellant is focused on whether or not the trooper actually smelled the odor of marijuana, or did he make it up? On the record, there is no reason to believe that the trooper made up smelling this odor. I would point out that in counsel's arguments, he vacillated between both positions, that the judge would have need to expressly made a credibility determination in her order, as well as at one point conceding that the district court did not need to expressly make that finding. My position is that the district court did not need to expressly state that she found the trooper credible, because in the context of her order, what she's saying is that she did find the trooper credible in his testimony. She did indicate that it would be conceivable that the trooper could have been focusing on other tasks and multitasking. That's the explanation for why the strong odor was notable to the trooper at the time of the reapproach instead of the initial approach.
Is conceivable the same thing as believable, though?
I think we have to look at it in context, and that in context it is. And it's followed up immediately by her acceptance of the state's argument and position regarding the multitasking. If the court did not find the trooper credible, then she would have sided with the defense, with the appellant, and found that there was not sufficient basis for the search. So in context, the state does believe that it is, and the great deference should be given to the district court. This court should accept the district court factual findings unless those findings were clearly erroneous. To be clearly erroneous means that the court must hold a definite and firm conviction, which is a high standard, that the district court made a mistake. Here, the district court was not clearly erroneous, and the finding is supported by reasonable evidence.
How do you respond to appellant's arguments that factually this is challenging given the way that smell works and the way that odors work? In particular, the officer's testimony that on the second approach, there's a strong odor of marijuana, and on the first approach, the officer didn't smell marijuana at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's something to appellant's argument that usually the smell would be, you know, common sense says the smell that would be the most pungent when you first open up that window. So how do you respond to those arguments?
Yes, the state certainly concedes the odor was there the whole time. right? There's no way that it wouldn't have been there the whole time. However, I think appellant is flawed in the argument of the way that the human body works. Yes, trauma can be associated with smell, but it can also be associated with the other senses as well. So every human body is different. Every experience is different. So we can't conclude that absolutely 100% you would automatically smell the odor on the first approach. You have to also be aware of the common human experience of multitasking. Officer safety is paramount in approaching during a traffic stop, and it's of utmost importance. Like I mentioned in the brief, there are multiple unknowns when an officer is approaching a vehicle in a traffic stop. They don't know how many people are inside. They don't know if someone's hiding inside the vehicle. They don't know if there's weapons in plain view or hidden, whether the people inside will be cooperative, what their demeanor will be like. They're focused on some of those immediate safety factors.
But isn't one of those factors that they're trained to consider, like it taking into account smells? I mean, obviously, part of officer safety can be using all of your senses to detect whether there is something that could harm the officer, and not using one of those senses would not necessarily be helpful to the officer.
Yes, I think that obviously that is part of the analysis and the approach and the things that are considered, but I don't think that that has to be present in order for the trooper to be credible. The odor of marijuana in and of itself isn't an immediate danger. Right, it's a controlled substance currently in the state of Minnesota, and so it's certainly something the officers are aware of, that this trooper was trained and experienced in, but it didn't present an immediate risk to him. So it wasn't until he had processed the citation, came back, some of those immediate preliminary questions were answered, that then he was able to detect the odor. I think the use of strong means that it was strong enough that it was something he asked about, something that he recognized. So he was lawfully able to expand the stop based on that. There is no rule, I think counsel conceded this, there is no rule that the trooper had to announce the moment that he smelled the marijuana. There is no rule that he had to smell so many grams of marijuana. He just had to smell the odor, and then he could lawfully expand the scope of the stop. In this case, the trooper was very orderly. He processed the citation, concluded that part before he opened up the questions based on his odor that he smelled of marijuana. And that doesn't mean that the traffic stop had ended or that his legal basis for being there had ended. It was consistent with the lawful stop. And there were more factors than just the odor of marijuana.
Well, I mean, the cop did do something interesting here, right, where the trooper basically says, here's what we're going to do with regard to what I've pulled you over for, and then says, so that's going to be that portion of it. Which I do think makes this factually different than other cases where you might have handed the citation to the driver and then asked some more questions. It does seem like the officer was saying, we're now moving into something new. And what do we need to do with the fact that that is what the officer was signaling to the driver of the vehicle?
It was a new topic, that's correct, moving from the citation to the marijuana. But the fact is that when he was reapproaching to give the citation, which is what we would expect an officer to reapproach and either say you're free to leave or we're giving you the citation, right, completing that portion of it, it's simultaneous with that he smells the marijuana. So he still is lawfully there. He still lawfully smells the odor of marijuana. He still is lawfully able to expand the scope by then transitioning into that portion of it.
Do you have any cases in your brief, or do you know of any cases where the scope of the stop is expanded after the initial citation is given and then the officer expands the scope of the stop? Just the temporal question that we're faced with here.
I'm not sure that I cited anything that specifically deals with it, but it is very common practice for the Minnesota State Patrol to go in that orderly fashion to conclude the citation and then address the smell afterwards. And I would note, too, here, there's not just the odor of marijuana, right? There's things that he was able to observe and detect throughout the course of the stop. We have the unlit cigarette, which I explain in the brief why that's uncommon, but the trooper did...
I guess I'm not clear why an unlit cigarette is suspicious. Maybe you could help me with that a little bit.
Yeah, so the trooper testified to 2 points. One, that it could be a sign of masking. He noted masking to both the air fresheners and the...
But how would an unlit cigarette mask an odor?
I think it's the presence of the cigarette. Unlike Bell, that the appellant cites, it's not in an unopened package. It's out. It's in his mouth. As the trooper testified, it really depended on where was the location of his lighter at the time of the stop, whether or not he would be able to light that as a masking odor. So it would be reasonable.
In terms of the masking odor, it doesn't make a great deal of sense to me. It seems like if he was going to mask it with a cigarette, the first thing he would have done is light it.
If he had time to do it, but maybe all he had time to do was to put it in his mouth and then the trooper approached the vehicle. Right, every experience, every circumstance is different, but what the officer is doing is evaluating the totality of the circumstances. Again, cigarettes are expensive. Cigarettes are commonly used with a filter, and it's not based in common sense and experience that someone would just sit with a cigarette in their mouth unless they had some intention for it. What we learned later in the case, of course, is that while the officer is trying to stop the vehicle, the driver is having the passenger shove drugs down their pants in order to hide them. So that would also go to did the driver actually have time to light the cigarette, or was it something that was attempted to do it? Either way, here we do have specific testimony from the trooper that he did recognize it as a sign of masking.
He certainly would have had time to light the cigarette by the time the officer spent 6 minutes back there working on the ticket, right?
Again, if that was something that he chose to do, the trooper had already been to the vehicle at one point, and then it depends on where his lighter actually was located for him to be able to do that. But in addition to those things, you have the air fresheners in multiple locations. You have them both in a mirror, hanging from the rearview mirror, and in the vent. So those things combined with the odor of marijuana allowed the trooper to search at that point, but the trooper didn't just search at that point. They asked about the odor of marijuana.
And do you think that there was enough to expand the scope of the stop if the officer did not smell marijuana? Do you think that the other two factors were sufficient?
I think it's a much closer question, but I think that here that the district court found the trooper credible based on the order that was issued, and I don't think the court even needs to get to that point based on the record before it.
So you would say that appellant's first argument hinges on our decision on his second argument, whether the finding on marijuana was clearly erroneous?
I don't think that it's dispositive, but it definitely is very important for the court. It's a much closer call in terms of the fresh cigarette from the mouth and the air fresheners.
And would you agree that it's not our job to assess the credibility of an officer, you know, based on a transcript and a video? It's the job of the district court.
I would, Your Honor. And case law is very clear that is the job of the district court. The district court is able to observe the mannerisms and a lot of things that you guys can't see in a written record. And that's why great deference is given to the district court, finding that the clearly erroneous standard applies. And I would ask the court to not nitpick or overly criticize the word choice of the district court of the use of the word conceivable, but to review that in context of the overall findings in the order and to find that the court did have reasonable evidence to make its decision on and to affirm the district court.
So what I'm hearing you say, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, is that we should find that the district court implicitly found the trooper to be a credible witness?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's consistent with the order. Thank you.
I have one additional question. What should we make of the reference to a non-testifying officer having testified?
Yes, Your Honor. First, I would point out that there was no objection by the appellant at the district court level when that evidence was being entered in terms of the admission of the exhibit. I see Your Honor looking. There was some objection about questions of the trooper, but there was no objection to the admission of the exhibit. And then following that, I would say that it really isn't relevant to Your Honor's analysis of the issues before the court here. The reference to that was basically an assisting trooper noted furtive movements of the passenger, but the odor and the expansion of the stop really happened before that assisting officer arrived on scene.
Well, I think that the question is, I think the district court implies that the second officer actually testified, which it would have been hard to object prior to the order itself. I think that you're answering whether the confrontation clause question was raised in front of the district court. We do still review for plain error constitutional questions that were not. So your argument is that we need to decide the question, but we have to decide it under the plain error standard of review. Is how I understand your argument from your brief.
I guess just to clarify, right, there was no objection to the exhibit in terms of we're only allowing the court to consider it to this point or for these purposes. But again, I don't think that the actual issue that's being litigated here today, that it would matter for that. It would be, because sometimes, right, the appellate court says we're not going to address this issue because we're already able to reach our conclusion based on the aforementioned issue. And the fact that the assisting officer made observations was following the issue before the court. At what point did the officer smell the marijuana, if he smelled the marijuana, and was that a sufficient basis in the totality of the circumstances to expand this, to expand the stop?
Well, even if we eliminate that portion of the order, does the fact that the district court, it didn't imply, but actually stated that the backup officer testified, does that affect our analysis of whether the other factual findings in the order were clearly erroneous?
I don't believe that it does. And really, if you have concerns about that part, right, you can just remove that part from the order, evaluate the rest of the order, and it would still get us to where we are, that it was not a clearly erroneous finding. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get the clock reset here. And would you like to give rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Looks like we're not quite. No. Looks like we're ready to go. You may begin when you're ready.
Thank you. The first thing I would like to address on rebuttal is that the district court absolutely needed to make a credibility determination. I don't want to misconstrue what I'm saying, that I think that appellant can prevail on argument one without one, just because the argument is that strong. The district court had to make a credibility determination and did not make one. I think the appellant prevails on every argument. On the Saivong precedent, on credibility, and on the plain error of the other officer testifying. The reason why we are going with the Saivong precedent has to do with what was just addressed by a respondent on credibility, where it's not the job of Court of Appeals to make factual findings. There's deference, and deference to the district court. And in this case, the district court did not make a totality of the circumstances analysis, did not make a credibility determination, and just said that it was conceivable. And that's why I think that this case should be precedent, because there needs to be protection of people in stops. And that can only happen at this judicial level, and the amount of cases that are going to make it up to the Court of Appeals is infinitesimally small. And I talk about that, you know, potential for abuse of the odor of marijuana, because it doesn't show up on a video. It doesn't show up on an audio. And so you have a situation where it's smelled on reapproach at the same time that the citation is given. And then this court has to have deference to the district court, who didn't even make the proper analysis of the totality of the circumstances, nor a credibility determination. The respondent talking about how it was simultaneous smell plus citation, it was in State v. Bell, where there was no interval between the issuing of the ticket and asking for consent to search, which he agreed to, and that was overturned. When it comes to smells, and we talked, I gave an example of even in trauma, you'll remember something, and the court pointed out that this is an officer that's trained and concentrating on smell. The state and the respondent has consistently stressed officer safety as the reason why he wouldn't smell it on first approach. In this case, we get to see how this officer acts in a situation where officer safety may be involved, because immediately after the question, he asks if there are any weapons, and Mr. Thomas states that he has a permit to carry, and the officer or the trooper in this matter stays completely calm, and he handles it, and he says, you know, another trooper will be on the way. Everybody stay calm. You've been calm so far. He talks about how calm Mr. Thomas has been. And so I think that shows the trooper's demeanor under that type of a situation, is that this is an experienced trooper who can handle officer safety issues and is absolutely already concentrating on smell from the beginning of this stop.
Does the record contain anything about officer safety implicating the ability to smell? I don't recall that.
I believe that the respondent's argument, as well as the order of the court, talks
well,
about.
I guess by record, I mean, was there any testimony about
no.
an officer maybe not being able to perceive a smell due to anxiety or
no, there was
anything
no
like that?
There was no testimony about officer safety as it relates to smell in any format.
So where would that even come from as far as we're concerned? What would support that? Just speculation?
Speculation. The first point we see that is in the state's brief and to the court at the district court level and then the court's order. It was not raised in testimony. I think it was speculated upon and then used as justification in the order as to an explanation why smell would not be there and then appear later and would appear in a strong manner. And so I think just to go back, just so I'm clear on this, I think that the credibility is absolutely not there for the first argument, second argument, or the third argument, and I think the appellant can prevail on all three.
I do have one question about your third argument. So you appear to raise it as a confrontation clause issue, but in the discussion today, you've said it was a clearly erroneous finding. So are you challenging the finding itself, or are you challenging the legal question of whether your client was entitled to confront the witness?
That it's plain error for the judge to rely on it, as this court has stated. I mentioned the confrontation clause in the argument because he has the right to confront witnesses against him, and we have an officer testifying who's being listed as a witness against him as a testifying officer who did not testify.
Well, there's no doubt that your time is up. Thank you both very much for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to us, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame, which is 90 days from today. Take care.
Thank you.